Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Now on for the show. Breaking news! WKZO Radio has just reported that Richard Bernstein has just become Michigan's first blind Supreme Court justice. The Washington Times says that Justice Bernstein has been blind since birth. Blindness didn't keep Bernstein from following his family's footsteps into the legal profession. The Washington Times and the Michigan judiciary both say that Justice Bernstein championed disability rights as a legal assistant for his family's law firm. That experience helped Bernstein earn the title of Michigan's first blind Supreme Court justice. Justice Bernstein joins us to talk about his journey to being appointed to this high-ranking office. He's going to also talk about some of his very first duties on the job. Hi, Justice Bernstein.
Well, good evening. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you so much for having me, and thank you for such a wonderful introduction.
Oh, you're welcome.
I do have to just correct one quick thing is that in Michigan, we elect our judges. So ultimately, I had to, was elected by the entire state of Michigan to have the opportunity to serve the people of the state of Michigan in this position.
Okay, that makes sense. The Washington Times says that you've been blind since birth. How did you become blind?
Well, so I was born blind. So I have been like this my entire life. So this is the perspective and the understanding and the appreciation that I've always gone through life with.
Since elementary school, you've always worked hard to be the most prepared you can be in your life. How do you live by this philosophy each and every day?
Well, I think that ultimately as a blind justice, you realize that, you know, we don't get to choose the lives that we have. We get the lives that we're given. So ultimately, you know, you basically have to make that determination that, look, you know, I've got to memorize and internalize and really focus each and every day. But that's just what I do. You know, ultimately, you know, I believe that if you are lacking one ability, your other senses will make up for it. And yes, it does take a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of energy, but I really have come to believe that anything and everything is possible. You just have to want it.
How do you memorize and internalize all of your cases, though?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's funny. We just literally finished our March case call yesterday. So we had about 10 cases. And what I do is I work with my clerks. I've got a great team of people. And I basically, every blind person does things their own way. But I choose to memorize and internalize things because I think that the more I can hear a case and hear the briefs, the easier it is for me to confer and discuss and talk about all the issues that are relevant or important. So for me, my preparation time is about four times as much as it would be for an able-bodied person. But I think that really puts you in a good position to know, understand, and really appreciate the material that you're working with.
What are some of the cases that you worked on, if you can discuss them on air?
Well, sure. I mean, it's funny because I was elected to serve as Michigan Supreme Court Justice back in November of last year. So I've actually only been a judge now for like 6 weeks. So I've been in my position since January 1st. And it's funny because literally I've only been a judge for just a short period of time. But the types of cases that, you know, I used to work on prior where I was a litigator, I used to do all my work pro bono. I wouldn't charge for legal representation. And I would basically fight to make life better for people with disabilities and special needs who otherwise could not afford legal representation. So the kind of cases I used to handle and work on were everything from allowing for people with disabilities to have access to aviation, to having access to commercial facilities like stadiums, to having access to public transport like, you know, city buses, to having access to even doing simple things like crossing the street, where we took on the road commission to build roundabouts in a compliant manner to allow all people to use and access them. So basically, my cases kind of ran the gamut, but they were really designed to make sure that people with disabilities and special needs could have access to the life they were meant to live.
tell us more about your father, Sam Bernstein, because you worked for a Sam Bernstein law firm as a legal assistant. Tell us more about your dad and his well-known Michigan firm.
Well, sure. I have a wonderful family. And, you know, I think that makes all the difference, because I have been blessed with such a wonderful family. And I think that that has had such an incredible impact. So, you know, I have an older brother and a younger sister. So I'm the middle child. But my dad is an amazing person, because he started his law firm on his own. The Sam Bernstein Law Firm was established by him, and it's grown to having well over 100 people. And what was great was he and my brother and my sister were the ones that allowed me to create the Public Services Division. And it was through the Public Services Division that I was able to represent the clients and do the work that I love doing, because the Sam Bernstein Law Firm, when I used to be a part of it, handled all the cases that I took on a pro bono basis and never charged for legal representation. So I'm very blessed to have had the father that I had and the mother and my whole family, because they really allowed me to do the work that I love doing. And it's my hope that it really did result in the ability to make a difference and enhance life for other people.
And you made your consultations free and your litigation free for the clients, which was a good thing for them, because there are a lot of disabled people out there, a good number of them, who don't have a lot of money to pay all those high attorney fees, and that they can still be helped at the same time, get the rights that they want to get, access the sports stadiums, get access to the hospitals, get access even to the movie theaters.
Indeed. And I think that's why, you know, and I have to confess, I miss being a litigator. I mean, you know, I've moved into my new role as a Supreme Court justice, and I look forward to being here for many, many years. And that is, you know, definitely a change, because, you know, that was before I assumed the role as justice. That was the type of work I was able to do. And I really enjoy doing that, you know, fighting for folks to give them a better life and give them more opportunities. But at the end of the day, that's what the law is about. And I was given the incredible blessing of having the chance to practice law. So I really believe that, you know, through that blessing, it allowed me to do the work that I love doing. And it's given me a really wonderful life, because when you have a life that's filled with purpose and mission, it's a really great life to live.
And when we fulfill our lives with purpose and mission, that makes us as people happy. And it also makes others happy, because we're helping improve society.
Indeed. People who live with purpose and mission really do live a wondrous, full, and incredibly exciting life.
But before you became judge, you ran. This is according to Fox 2 Detroit and M Live. You ran for the office of Michigan's Attorney General in 2010.
That's correct.
Why did you decide to run for this important role?
Well, ultimately, things always work out for the best. They really, really do. And it was interesting, because before I had the chance to become Supreme Court Justice, I was elected statewide to serve on the Wayne State University Board of Governors. And now that was a great experience, because I think before you run for a position like this, to serve on the state's highest court and go through a statewide election, you know, I think you have to have a little bit of training and do something prior. So for me, I had the chance to serve on the Wayne State University Board of Governors. And again, that's another position which is elected on a statewide basis. And ultimately, I had the chance to serve for 8 years in that position. Wayne State has about 35,000 students. It works with 5 major hospitals. It's just a wonderful institution with a great, great urban mission. And I served there for 8 years. 4 years, I was a member of the board. And then for 2 years, I was the vice chair, and then ultimately became the chair of the board. And I think that elections are important, because what they do is they allow for you to connect with people and get to know people and allow for people to get to know you. And I think the more that you're out there spending time with people, going to festivals, going to county fairs, going to all the various places that people congregate and meet, the more that you do that, the more connection you have to people, the better you can connect with people, the better you're going to be in these types of positions.
Network, network, network. That's the way to get into those positions. But you lost the attorney general's race. Why do you think you lost?
Well, first off, it was the absolute best thing that could have happened was losing that race. It just really wasn't a good year for Democrats. And candidly, I really think everything happens for a purpose, and it happens for a mission, it happens for a reason. And I'll tell you what you learn from that. The people that are the best able to serve are the people who have been defeated and who know challenge and who know hardship. And I think that's a very important thing. You don't want someone who's won everything all the time, because they're not going to have a real empathy or understanding. And I think often is the case that a person's true colors are revealed on how they lose. And I think the reason I'm in this position is because when I lost to the other Democrat that was running, you know, what I ultimately did at the convention was the first thing that I did was I got up and congratulated him, got behind his campaign, and fully supported him to become Michigan's next Democratic Attorney General. And I think what happened is that unfortunately that candidate was not successful in that statewide race after convention. But I think what happened was that people learn often is, how do you react when things don't go your way? And if you stand up and you're a team player and you believe in the purpose and the mission and you show that there's a greater purpose than beyond yourself, then what happens is that people get a chance to see who you are, what you're made of, what you're about, and what you care about. And I think often is the case that sometimes losing can be the greatest thing, because it allows for people to see who you truly are and how you respond to those situations.
And that you're a nice and caring person.
Nice and caring, but also that you believe in being on a team.
Sure. The Michigan Judiciary and Detroit Free Press say that you're a Phi Beta Kappa graduate of the University of Michigan. You graduated from there in 96, and you got your law degree from Illinois' Northwestern University School of Law in 1999. How did going to these two universities help you get a jump start on your legal career?
Well, I really enjoyed the University of Michigan. Was a fantastic experience, because what I love about the University of Michigan is it allowed you to grow, kind of find your place, and develop as a person. I love Northwestern University School of Law. I was so blessed to have the opportunity to attend the Northwestern University School of Law. It was an amazing law school. They basically gave me my profession. And I'll tell you, the best part about Northwestern was the fact that I had a chance to participate in their clinical studies program. And I think the Northwestern clinical studies program was the absolute best experience I ever could have had, because they gave me the chance to learn how to become a lawyer, to learn how to do trials, to learn how to do this type of work. So I think that with any law school, what makes it great is its clinical studies division. And if you go to a school that has a really strong, really good clinical studies program, it will give you the opportunity to do great things.
Justice Bernstein, we've got a question from one of our listeners, Joe Harse. He's an advocate. He writes, when will you and others ensure that state agencies in Michigan, including the Bureau of Services for the Blind and the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, are fully accessible to the blind in accordance with the ADA and Section 504? I have personally documented that they are not, in that they don't have effective communications policies in place for providing all information in alternate formats and in a timely manner, and that there are literally tens of thousands of documents and web pages on the Michigan.gov websites that are inaccessible. Moreover, as I've also documented, most state buildings don't have required raised character and braille signage on every permanent room, including room numbers, and that includes the state capitol, Cadillac Place, which you sued for ADA violations, etc., etc. How do you respond to this?
Well, first off, you know, I think it's important to note that you always have to appreciate, you know, people's concerns. But I think what's important to point out is that I am in a separate branch of government. I am a justice of the Michigan Supreme Court, and ultimately my branch is the judicial branch. So ultimately, you know, what happens when you serve in this role or serve in this capacity is that I'm actually barred by canon of ethics from being able to answer a question such as that, because ultimately, you know, these are issues that can result in pending litigation. And whenever you're dealing with any issue as it pertains to litigation or it pertains to any issue such as that, that's a matter that could come before the court. So if I were to answer that question, I would immediately have to recuse myself from being able to hear any such case dealing with any such issues like that.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yes.
I understand, though, that you've got readers for each case. How did hiring these individuals help you learn about and solve each case?
Well, I think it's just a pretty standard thing that if you're going to serve as, you know, if you're going to serve as like a blind justice, the way that it works is that, you know, my reader actually reads hours and hours each day, because I want you to think about what it would be like to have to serve in this context as a reader. It's active reading. So what's happening is that you're reading an appellant's brief, you're reading an appellee's brief, you are reading the state constitution, the legislative history, you're reading all of these things at one time. And you're making notations as you read and memorializing the documents as you read. So it isn't just straightforward reading, it's internalization and memorization as it goes forward.
So I understand that while you're off the bench, you've run more than 15 marathons. You've ridden a bike more than 100 miles. You've swam over 2 miles. And you ran over 26 miles in a 2008 triathlon. What's inspired you to compete in these athletic competitions?
Well, so I think the thing that I've really enjoyed is I've been blessed. I've had the opportunity to have completed 18 marathons as well as a full Ironman competition. And so what is great about that is that after having completed 18 marathons, you know, I run with a team of guides and they give you directional cues. Hard right, soft right, hard left, soft left, and you follow the directional cues as you're running. Now, the Ironman was a little bit more difficult because the Ironman is a 2.4-mile swim followed by a 112-mile bike to be completed by a 26.2-mile run. Took about 2 years of training. That was incredibly challenging because you're not able to communicate with your guide as you're swimming. So you keep getting kicked in the face. It's hard to surface because there's other swimmers immediately above you. And often is the case that other swimmers become entangled in the rope that connects you to your guide. So you start to feel a drowning sensation because you start getting dragged below the surface. But I think these competitions allow for you to work as a team. You know, you get a chance to be a part of a team. You get a chance to work with your team. You spend time with your team. You do things with your team. You train with your team. And you really come to find at the end of the day that no matter how challenging or hard or difficult life gets, I really have come to believe this. You'll always have what you need when you need it. Nothing more, but nothing less. And I think athletics allows for you to find your inner strength and inner capability and allow for you to do the things that you never thought possible.
The Washington Times says that you were struck by a speeding bicyclist while you ran in New York Central Park in 2012. That incident put you in the hospital for several weeks. How did you recover from the accident and overcome some of your fear to get back into the marathons, including the legal profession?
Sure. I mean, that was a very difficult time because at the point of the accident, I had done 17 marathons and a full Ironman competition. So athletics had really become, for all intents and purposes, my whole life. And after getting struck by the cyclist, I had to live at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City for over 10 weeks. It was a 10-week hospitalization. And I literally had to start by learning how to do everything all over again. And I had to do everything from the very beginning. It was a very difficult time, and it was a very arduous struggle. But what you find is that it teaches you how to work through it. It teaches you how to face the challenge, how to deal with the difficulties, and how to accept the pain as a part of your life. And, you know, for me, it was celebrating the small things, like sitting up in bed or using a walker or making it to the nurse's station. And I think at a certain point, you just have to come to realize as you move through life that, you know, there's a lot of things that are unfair or that, you know, are unjust and that, you know, just aren't right. But this is the life that we have. And you have to choose how you want to live it and how, what you want to do to make, what you want to do about it. Because, you know, we don't get to make those choices about the lives that we're given. And for me, I just made a decision that I just had to push forward and I just had to move on. And I had to just simply focus on accepting the pain because I live with a horrible chronic pain every day. And I just had to accept that pain was going to be a part of life from now on. But it was interesting that about a year ago, I did the New York City Marathon on a, you know, shattered hip and a crushed pelvis. And I ran through the streets of New York and went through a pain that was so severe that I was struggling just to simply not lose consciousness. And I think what happens is that we all have these eternal battles that kind of exist within all of our lives. And I think at a certain point in life, you just come to realize that those who have infirmities, like disabilities, like people like myself, you know, our bodies might be infirmed, but we have very strong spirits and very strong souls. So often it is not the body that shows the strength, but ultimately the spirit is the one that does.
I agree. So what are your future plans as the first blind Supreme Court justice? What are the people in Michigan and the blind and visually impaired going to see from you around America in the next probably 6 months in terms of your work?
I hope that they are going to see a justice who is fair, who applies the facts to the law. And I hope that they're going to see a justice who is a good justice, who is a prepared justice, who's a well-organized justice. I hope they're going to see a kind justice and a compassionate justice and a good-natured justice. But most importantly, I hope they're going to be seeing someone who is incredibly professional and takes their work serious and is always prepared for whatever challenges or difficulties lie ahead.
What advice do you have for our listeners, though, who want to pursue a career in law?
Well, I think the way that people need to look at things are just always know that it's going to be challenging. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. But just keep at it. Change never comes in a day. I think real change comes over slow, painfully methodical steps. But that if you stick with something, if you stay with it, if you refuse to give up, if you say that you're willing to make the sacrifices, but most importantly, know that change does not come overnight. Change comes in painfully slow, methodical steps. And that as long as you can realize that you're going on a journey that might take some time, might take some effort, might take a lot of work, but that you're willing to be a part of it, you're willing to do it because you believe in the greater purpose and greater cause, you can simply know that you're part of something great. And ultimately, remember that everybody has their own story. And it's through our stories that we come to know each other and that we come to appreciate life. But the most important thing that we always have to emphasize is the best lawyers, the best judges are the ones who can empathize, who can understand, and are able to connect with other people. It is all about compassion and connection. The more you can connect with others, the better you're going to be at what you're going to do.
Exactly. How can our listeners learn more about you and get in touch with you if they've got any questions?
Well, I guess the best way they can do it is just to contact Chambers. We're located at the Michigan Supreme Court, and I am in what's called the Hall of Justice Building in Lansing, Michigan. But I know it's listed. If you would just look up Justice Richard Bernstein in Lansing, Michigan, it should take you to the Hall of Justice at the Michigan Supreme Court.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to say that I love your program. I love your show. I love what you're doing. And please keep doing what you're doing. Keep spreading the word, because honestly, this is how you can change the world. Awareness creates understanding. So thank you, and God bless you for this opportunity. Thank you for your program, and thank you for your work in getting the word out about people who are disabled.
Oh, I'm flattered. The pleasure's mine. Thank you, Your Honor, and you inspire us all. And we wish you the best of luck in your new position with the Michigan Supreme Court. Thanks for joining us today.
God bless you.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening. And remember to speak out.
Join me, Brian McKellen, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.